here just to acknowledge that our nation is hurting yet again from a tragedy caused by gun violence. This time, most recently, the mass shooting in Boulder, Colorado. Over and over again, we see gun violence harming our communities across the nation. Too many lives are being taken by senseless gun violence. Just last week, we saw a spree of racist murders that targeted Asian American women outside of Atlanta. To the families, to the loved ones, and to the communities traumatized by these recent mass murders, we stand with you. We also know all too well the consequences of gun violence here in Portland, Oregon. I remain firmly committed to working with my colleagues, the Office of Violence Prevention, and our many community partners to reduce gun violence here in our home. This is a national problem, of course, but we must find local solutions that work for the needs of our community. I'd like to ask for a moment of silence for those lost in recent mass shootings. Thank you, colleagues. And before we gavel in, I'll ask if anybody has any thoughts that they'd like to share. Commissioner Hardesty, good morning.
Good morning, Mayor. Good morning, colleagues. Thank you, Mayor, for asking for that moment of silence. What we continue to see across the nation is hate leading is being the leading cause of so much of the mass shootings that are taking place across our country. People's lack of knowledge and awareness and empathy for people who are not like themselves. I don't want to inflate the rise in mass shootings with the rise in gun violence that's also happening all across the country. I see them as two separate issues. I see one issue is one that's led by hate. And we've seen that play out over and over and over again. We have too many young white men with too much access to firearms. And that's what we see play out in mass shootings all over the country. Over and over and over again. And yet we continue to make excuses for them when that happens. The reality is that there are too many guns in our society and we need to fix that. There's no reason that we continue to see so much mass collection of firearms and violence. We've seen it in our own community. We've seen it both by the police as well as by community members. So for me, the big issue is violence and how do we reduce violence in our community? How do we reduce domestic violence, which also is up 150 to 300% over the last year? How do we make sure that children who are not being reported for child abuse get the help that they need? I hope that we as a council will take a holistic approach and not a one-size-fits-all approach to addressing gun violence in our community and addressing the rise in hate that's creating these opportunities for mass shootings. Again, thank you for the moment today. Thank you for the opportunity to speak up. My empathy and sympathy goes out to the Asian Pacific Islander community, who since the beginning of this pandemic has been hit over and over and over again with racist, hateful rhetoric. And it is time for us as a community to stand up and not allow these incidents to go unchecked and unacknowledged by us. We have an obligation to make sure people feel safe in this community. And I can tell you, people of color haven't felt safe in this community for a long, long time. I hope we collectively will address the hate, will address the harm, and will address the need for healing. What we need as a city is to heal, and we cannot heal if we're not acknowledging the racism that impacts our day-to-day life in this community and the people who are being targeted by it. We can take a knee-jerk reaction and say, yeah, we just need more guns on the street because that will fix it. But we know that won't, because we've lived through more guns on the street and we know that doesn't fix it. Let's figure out how to heal as a community, and let's figure out how to center the folks who've been most harmed over the last 4 years by hateful rhetoric that's created these opportunities for people to continue to act out in ways that does not reflect who we are, doesn't reflect our values, and it certainly doesn't reflect what we want to build coming out of this pandemic. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. Commissioner Ryan.
Yes. Good morning, everyone, and good morning, Mayor. And thank you for setting aside this time to be silent and now just share some comments. And thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, for those poignant words. My heart is filled right now with thinking about the loved ones who've lost their daughter, their auntie, their mother, their cousin, their son, their father, their uncle, their cousin, to hate and violence and untreated mental health in Atlanta and in Boulder. I think it was necessary that we weave in, of course, what happened in Atlanta last week. The hate we saw in Atlanta with the loss of the 8 lives, 6 of them Asian, shocked to the core of many of us, especially those in the Asian and Pacific Islander communities. And we've seen a rise in violent and racist attacks on our Asian neighbors that was perpetuated by a racist and ignorant former president. Our Asian Pacific Islander community members, you matter. And the hurt and the pain that you're feeling is something that we're all feeling here in the city of Portland as well. The violence that took 9 lives in Boulder is also felt deeply. These were individuals that were going about their day, went to a grocery store, completing a task that is necessary, somewhat mindless at times, and a lot of us just assume we're okay. But precious life instead was taken. For many, this tragedy is very triggering and adds to that constant threat we feel when we step just outside of our homes. These tragedies, while heavy and painful, they're not surprising. The systems that uphold and enable hate and violence in our community is deeply rooted and layered. Together as a community that embraces each other and works with one another with the common goal of keeping each other safe, we can overcome and change these systems with more investments into those communities that are targeted and are most deeply impacted. Thank you again for taking a moment to allow us to center ourselves at this time.
Thank you, Commissioner Ryan. Appreciate your comments. Very good. With that then, I don't see anybody else's hand raised. We will now go into session. This is the Wednesday, March 24th, 2021 session of the Portland City Council. Keelan, please call the roll. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor. Rubio.
Here.
Ryan.
Here.
Hardesty.
Here.
Knox.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. Under Portland City Code and State Law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the Council are attending remotely by video and teleconference. The city has made several avenues available for the public to listen to the audio broadcast of this meeting. The meeting is available to the public on the city's YouTube channel, EGOPDX, www.portlandoregon.gov/video, and channel 30. The public can also provide written testimony to the council through the council clerk at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. The council is taking these steps as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact as well as to promote physical distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare, which requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. Thank you all for your patience, your flexibility, and your understanding as we manage through this difficult situation to do the city's business. And with that, we'll hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum. Good morning.
Morning, Mr. Mayor and Council.
Hey, Matt.
To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communication to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. The published council agenda at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while the city council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or rejected for the remainder of the electronic meeting. Please be aware that all council meetings are recorded. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. And I've concluded that between your public message and my public message, we're probably putting the whole world to sleep. Everyone's doing work. I think next week we should try to sing it or do something different.
Well, I will work on that this week.
But at least you read it with feeling, and I appreciate that. You outdid me. So first up, colleagues, is communications. Keelan, we have a couple of people signed up. If you could bring the first person in at 167, please.
Request of Mary Sipe to address council regarding affordable housing.
Ah, Mary, welcome. It's good to hear from you again.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So nice to be here. So my name's Mary Sipe. After watching city council sessions on TV for a number of years, in 2017, I decided to begin attending city council in person every week. One of the reasons I made this decision was because I observed people giving public testimony that was inaccurate, and I felt compelled to speak up and set the record straight. It's one thing when members of the public give misinformation. It's even more concerning to me when members of city council give misinformation. On March 9th, during Commissioner Hardesty's virtual open house, Commissioner Hardesty made a comment about affordable housing. Affordable for who, she stated. She then went on to say that the majority of affordable units in Portland are 80% of the median family income, or MFI. She also stated that the income restriction for a family of four at 80% of MFI is in the range of $82,000, with a minimum income requirement in the range of $70,000. This is not the first time I've heard her state this type of figure. I've lived in affordable Section 42 low-income housing in Portland for over 10 years, and I've researched and confirmed that the majority of affordable housing in Portland is 50% and 60% of MFI, not 80%. Please see the table of income and rents for Multnomah County, which I provided, and you will see that the maximum income for a family of four to be eligible is $73,680 at 80% of MFI, $55,260 at 60%, and $46,050 at 50%. This is the maximum annual income that you can make to be eligible. If your income is more than that, then you do not qualify. There is no minimum income requirement to be eligible. The only minimum income requirement is that their monthly income is 1.5 times the monthly rent. If you look at the chart I submitted, you will see the maximum rent for a two-bedroom apartment at 80% is $1,658 a month. 1.5 times 1658 is a monthly income of at least $2,487, which equates to a minimum annual income of $29,844, not $70,000, or $14.35 per hour. At 60%, it would be $22,374, or $9 an hour. At 50%, it would be $18,648. $10.45 an hour. I agree with Commissioner Hardesty that we need more 30 and 40% apartments. However, someone making 30, 40% of MFI would still qualify for a 50 or 60% MFI apartment because their income does not exceed the maximum, as long as their monthly income is 1.5 times the rent. Maybe we should stop using the term affordable and start and go back to using the term low income. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. And I think Commissioner Hardesty had a comment.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Mary. I really appreciate you checking my data. And I think the data that I reference is the data around the housing that we've been building over the last couple of years. And when you look at what the income restrictions are, I think in that category, I believe 100% correct. I think you are also correct because you're talking about what we used to call vouchers for low-income housing.
No. Are you thinking of Section 8?
Yes, I was thinking Section 8.
No, I'm talking about the Section 42 low-income tax credit programs, which are the majority of what we have in Portland and what I live in. And also, I think, so you're saying that your numbers are referring to the inclusionary housing?
That is, no, my numbers are referring to I'm forgetting the term right now. Maybe Commissioner Ryan can remind me. But you know, the housing where we give developers a tax break for 5 years and then it's permanently affordable.
That is what Section 42 is on the federal level. Are you talking about here in Multnomah County?
I am talking about the multi program here at the city of Portland. And so if you look at the proposals that have come through, actually, I'm happy to have this conversation. I realize we're doing this in public, but my main issue was to thank you. I really appreciate seeing you at City Hall in the good old days where we met there. And I'm happy to have this conversation with you.
I would love that because I think people don't really understand what we have available. And I really appreciate that. And I do look forward to seeing all of you in person again.
I do too. And Mary, let me just say that I agree with you. Let's stop using the term affordable housing because it doesn't mean anything to anybody, right? Let's use the term housing. I started using the term housing people can afford to live in because that's a lot different. Thank you. I appreciate you being here today.
Thanks, Commissioner.
Good back and forth. Appreciate that. Mary, it's always great to hear your voice. And Commissioner Hardesty, thank you for that. Sorry, I muted myself. Next up, 168, next individual.
Request of Scott Weber to address council regarding Hazelnut Grove Tiny Cabin Village as a benefit to the Overlook neighborhood.
Welcome, Scott. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, and good morning, city council members. Yes, the gun violence, we see it a lot here in Portland, and it's very troubling. I'm nearly 60 years old. I grew up here in Portland. I did a remodel once for the guy that set the center section on the Fremont Bridge. I've built a lot of homes in this city for people that made their money from Microsoft. In 2010, my wife got a brain lesion that took her out of a very good job and ended our five-year ministry house where we had helped 51 people. I started to collapse to the ground with paralysis. And that's when we fell onto your streets, Mr. Mayor, not as drug addicts, not as criminals, basically two people that disabled out of the workforce. Through this, we lost our home. My college degree was really not going to be useful, especially now since I've undergone so many surgeries. What have I done to cope with that? I went to college. I got educated. I picked up the guitar 13 years ago. I play it every day. I study theory with a metronome adamantly. I know many musicians. We've been around the country 5 times. I put a red cross on the back of my van, and yes, I owe the city of Portland some parking tickets. My apologies. I do intend to pay those. I'll have you know that I made it into the New York Times for feeding people on the streets. And I made it into the New York Times for being a medic because I was a medic in the Army. With all that said, with all this gun violence and all this hatred going around, I never distinguished between who was Black, white, or Asian. My heart breaks every day that we go downtown and we run trash crews and we do other things. And I support my wife in that. She carries the briefcase now. I make the bed and cook. And so it's fun to be on that site. And, I don't know if I said I'm with Hazelnut Grove. Gosh, I know, Mr. Mayor, you've got to be just tired of hearing that. But I want you to understand something. It's I've done all the things I just told you, from sleeping in a doorway behind an umbrella. I've done it from sleeping under the trees in the mountains. I've done it from inside a van, living in a van. I've done it in the front seat of a Geo where we lived in that for 6 months. And I never really did anything to other than fall to my disability, to fall into this and to be looked at as a drug addict. And this is where I can key in with what Joanne is saying, that until we get over the indifferences and the judging by appearances and the labels that we put on one another, you know, I have felonies from 30 years ago. Guess what? I turned myself in and I ended my life there. So I want to tell you that, yes, you have shelters for people all over town, and I think that's great. I would certainly say go first. I'll take the hit. I'm of the belief that my life has pretty much been lived, but that doesn't mean that it has to be corrupted. But you know what? Hazelnut Grove saved my life, literally. I was coming out of my second surgery where I lost a significant portion of my stomach, and I fell into doorways and bushes after they cut me from stem to stern and took 8 feet of my small intestines and kicked me out of the hospital. I was in the bushes with my wife, who never left my side. You just got to know, I put that down there to know that here I am at Hazelnut. I love these people. From the moment I came here, I started pulling weeds and making this a better place. I take care of Greeley. I swept your Greeley for a half mile and cleaned your rain drains because I saw cars going down there and I know how fast they go down there. I don't want to see an accident. I go up to Interstate and I swept that, and I swept the sidewalks and made sure all that was clear up there. I make sure the bike path priority is clear. And we took out 3 trees that fell over the bike path and mended the fences, pick up the trash. We have the best looking stretch. I have no place to go, Mr. Mayor. If Hazelnut Grove ends, that's almost like a death sentence to me, because I just can't take doorways much more. My health at 60. I see people die out here all the time. They've practically died in my arms. I've had guns stuck in my face. I've been shot at. I know, and I'm not even, I'm a veteran, but I didn't go to war. But I've been more at war out here than I ever did when I went into the Army. And that's got to change. Let me just finish with this. I love this city, Mr. Mayor. And when it comes to picking up trash, I targeted the Lloyd District for 3 years. I was known as the fuck guy. I went around and said, you know what? It's going to come 4th down and 20 with that paint can if you don't stop assassinating our businesses. Without commerce, we can't make it as a city. And I watched night after night as I got evidence of these people. And I learned that the police can't use this evidence on their film because it's the redaction. And I says, oh, I can get you through redaction. I'll just film them while they're doing it. At great risk to myself, I've had knives pulled on me, guns pulled on me. I've been in fights. But I said, you know what? This is my city. Now, I understand some of the constituents come by here and they don't like the look of Hazelnut Grove. Just give us through the spring and these houses will look brand new because I have a 40-year construction background. But nevertheless, this is essential that we're here. I don't want this to look like, I don't want this to look like the park out there off of Marine Drive, Delta Park. I don't want this to look like the Laurelhurst neighborhood, because remember, I grew up here. I remember what those neighborhoods represent. And I appreciate this city. I give my life for this city every day to see that it's residents of the lower class, your constituents that are poor, make sure that they at least respect the city they live in. And so we try to enforce that at a level nobody else can reach. The police, the patrols, the security guards, the businesses, the hate from the public can't touch these people. But we can. We can speak through that. We speak to people who have a knife or a hatchet in their hand and they're wearing a helmet and their face is painted. But you know what? We've cried with them, ate with them, sat with them. Mr. Mayor, Hazelnut Grove is like a headquarters. I was in the military. It takes having a place, a base of operations. We send so much stuff out of here in our van. We take in donations and go out, and we are constantly busy. And we're celebrating now nearly 8 months of sobriety because of it, Mr. Mayor. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your concerns.
Scott, hang around for a second, because I think I'd like to acknowledge a couple of things you said. Commissioner Hardesty has her hand raised first. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Mr. Weber, for making time today to participate in communications. Let me say that we need your help. We've got some committees that I think you would be ideal to be on. And if you would be kind enough to leave your contact information with the clerk, I will be happy to reach out to you. Let me say thank you. Thank you for sharing your story. It is a story that brings me almost to tears, because it's not the first time I've heard a similar story. And thank you for your service as a former vet. I want to acknowledge your service to both our community and our country. I look forward to you and I having a conversation, Mr. Weber.
Thank
you. First of all, I want to acknowledge and thank you for being here. Second of all, I want to acknowledge your citizenship in this community. I appreciate you taking a stand against violence and taking a stand against criminal destruction. I appreciate that. I appreciate your courage. I appreciate the fact that you're looking out for your neighbors. I appreciate the fact that even though you are in a position of vulnerability, you're looking out for others who are also vulnerable. And I agree with you that people who are on the streets for whatever reason should have access to humane alternatives. As I've said many times, everyone deserves a place to call home, you and everybody else who are currently on the street. The balancing act that I do as mayor is, while I am trying to find compassionate approaches to getting as many people as quickly as possible off the streets, I also have to manage all of the other issues that are related to this city. And I think you will acknowledge, as you did in your testimony, that there are many unregulated, unsanctioned camps that are creating a lot of problems around the environment, around public health, around livability, around safety issues. And that is also my responsibility and the problem that I need to address. And so I'm trying to find that balance. And for the folks at Hazelnut Grove, one part of that balance was the St. John's Village. And we worked very, very closely with you and the other folks living at Hazelnut Grove to try and find a smooth transition from the Hazelnut Grove site to the sanctioned site at St. John's Village, which, if you've seen it lately, it's actually spectacular. And it will be well managed, and it will have access to hygiene services. It will have access to water, to showers, to laundry, to case management, into housing and other services that so many of your friends, as you acknowledge, so desperately need. And I think that is a better solution. And I know it's unpopular for me to say that, but that's what I honestly believe, that it is not safe for people to just be out on the streets. And you've acknowledged that there are safety issues as well. But nobody has a monopoly on the truth here. And you sound like a great guy. You sound like somebody I like, somebody I respect. And I want to extend to you the same offer that Commissioner Hardesty extended, was work with us. Help us find those viable solutions. Help us reach out to those who are far more vulnerable than you are. And let's get them off the street. Let's get them connected, whether it's substance abuse treatment or mental health services, domestic violence, survivorship services, youth services, into jobs, into educational opportunities, any alternative to what we know is a very dangerous and potentially hostile environment, which is living outside in the elements on our streets. So I really appreciate that you came forward today, and I respect you for it. Thank you. And thank you for, as Commissioner Hardesty said, your service to this nation. Frankly, you deserve better. And I hope this is the beginning of a dialogue, and hopefully a productive one as well. We need your insights as somebody with lived experience. I need your help, but I also need your acknowledgement that we're managing many facets of this homeless crisis. And while we all want to be humane, myself especially, I absolutely know that history will judge me for my actions here as mayor. I want to be humane, but I also want to get people off the streets. That's my goal. Thank you for being here today. Keelan, I think we have, does that actually complete communications? Do we just have the two today?
Yes, that completes communications.
All right, to the consent agenda, have any items been pulled?
Yes, item 174 has been pulled.
174 has been pulled with the exception of item 174, which we will move to the end of the regular agenda. Please call the roll.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The consent agenda is adopted to the regular agenda, item 177, please.
Appoint Kimberly Moreland to the Portland Historic Landmarks Commission for term to expire March 24th, 2025.
Commissioner Ryan.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mayor, and good morning. Good morning, Kimberly Moreland. Nice to see you on the screen. I have the pleasure of saying a few things about you before you'll be able to address us. First of all, it's a pleasure to appoint Kimberly Moreland to the Portland Historic Landmarks Commission to fill the role of Heritage Planning Consultant. Kimberly is a qualified candidate for this Historic Landmarks Commission by virtue of her extensive, and it is quite extensive, experience in the field of preservation, urban planning, advocacy, and heritage consultation locally and across the state of Oregon. Kimberly is a tireless advocate for advancing equitable outcomes for people of color, and has spent the last 30 years educating the public about African-American history in Oregon with an emphasis on historic places. Kimberly also serves on the board of Oregon Black Pioneers, the board of Bosque Powell Milligan Foundation, Architectural Heritage Center, and is a member of the Oregon Heritage Commission. Kimberly's experience will provide an unmatched depth of knowledge of local Black history, and her voice on the commission will help advance the commission's goals on ensuring preservation justice through its advocacy role. For these reasons, Kimberly is an exceptional candidate and will be particularly a good fit for the Heritage Planning Consultant position on the Historic Landmarks Commission. And we are humbly grateful that she is willing to lend her time and our energy to this role. With that, I do turn this over to Hillary Adam at the Bureau of Development Services, and we will present Kimberly Moreland to all of you. Thanks again, Kimberly, for stepping up and providing us your service. Take it away, Hillary.
Thank you, Commissioner Ryan, Mayor, Council members. We have been, I'd say, pursuing Kim's talents for a number of years, and some of you may remember that she provided testimony at last year's State of the City Preservation Report. I am very excited to have the opportunity to have Kim serve as one of the professional, fill one of the professional seats on the Historic Landmarks Commission. It's a very interesting time for the commission. Advocacy is a huge part of what they do besides just doing simple land use reviews. And we are looking at broadening the scope of our, I guess you could say our inventory of historic resources, hopefully someday with an actual survey. But I think some of Kim's work with the African-American resources, the Cornerstones Project from several years ago, and then some current projects that she's working on with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to designate a few more resources, which she could tell you about. We're super excited about that and just super grateful that she is willing to spend her time with us. So thank you.
Thank you. If I have just a moment to just say thank you. Good morning, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. And thank you so much, Commissioner Ryan, for approving the Historic Landmark recommendation to appoint me as one of the commissioners. And I am so excited. And, you know, I looked over my career and
I couldn't believe that it has been 30 years since I've been involved in documenting the history of African Americans in Portland, which led me into some wonderful opportunities to look at historic places. And it's going to be such a joy to help the city move forward and becoming telling the full story about the city of Portland. And I'm just honored to be part of the MPD that was recently approved to kind of recognize African American historic resources. And I just have a love for historic preservation in general, so, and a love of Portland, the city of Portland. So I look forward to learning more about all of our historic resources and ways that we can protect our city as we continue to grow. And oftentimes our resources are threatened by growth. And so it'd be great to help the city maintain that balance. So thank you again for your appointment. And I'm looking forward to helping the Historic Landmark Commission fulfill their mission.
Yeah. Thank you. We're thrilled that you're willing to serve. First Commissioner Hardesty, then Commissioner Rubio.
Thank you, Mayor. And Hillary, you did a good job. I am shocked that you were able to convince Kimberly Moreland to volunteer her time with us, but I am extremely grateful that she said yes. She certainly has been a trailblazer around preserving Black history in Oregon. And I just have to say, she's just remarkable. And having the kind of talent that Kimberly Moreland will bring to our Historic Preservation Commission, I think will be a culture shock for us all, but in a very good way. I think we are at a point where we must center the real story of our history and not the whitewashed version that so many of us are taught in our education system. And I am just thrilled, Kimberly, that you are taking on this role. And I believe that you will provide such a wealth of information and knowledge to people who are really struggling with where the balance is. You are strong. Your voice is necessary. And I just want you to know, if you need my help, I got your back. So I look forward to your service and the fabulous work that you will do to help us preserve all of our history as we move forward after this pandemic and start rebuilding. So thank you for your willingness to serve. Thank you, Hillary, for your insight into finding an incredible candidate. And thank you, Commissioner Ryan, for making it happen. I am grateful and I am very excited. I don't normally get excited about appointments. I just have to say, because they happen, you know, regularly. I am absolutely excited about this one. This one is going to show results immediately. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Harding. Hardesty.
Commissioner Rubio.
That means a lot. Thank you so much.
I also want to echo Commissioner Hardesty's words. I'm super excited about this appointment. Ms. Moreland, you're an exceptional addition to our Landmarks Commission. And I was reading your bio, and you're just such an accomplished author and historian for all of Oregonians. And we're incredibly fortunate to have your leadership in the city in multiple ways. And you're really joining at a time when we're all very much challenging and holding ourselves accountable to thinking about whose stories and experiences we're lifting up and whose have been silenced, and then correcting that narrative right now. So I also want to appreciate the tremendous work that you've done to document this important history, for it's literally shaped future generations of young Portlanders here, and it will continue to do so in an even more a more visible way in our institutions. We appreciate your deep commitment also to community service. I know you're very involved in multiple other things in the community that are all actively, improving the lives of a lot of Portlanders here. So I just want to say thank you. I'm very excited about what this means for all of us and for agreeing to serve.
Thank you so much. That means so much. Thank you.
I move the report.
Second.
We have a motion. We have a second from Commissioner Hardesty. Helen, please call the roll.
I think Commissioner Rubio's hand is just still up. It's okay. It's all good.
Rubio?
Aye.
Ryan?
Thank you again, Commissioner Moreland. We're delighted that you're going to be a part of improving the culture at the city. We stand on shoulders. Yours are pretty awesome. Aye.
Hardesty?
Definitely aye.
Maps?
I just want to express my appreciation for Ms. Moreland's willingness to serve our city. I look forward to working with you, and it is a delight for me to vote aye.
Wheeler?
Amidst all the self-loathing that Portlanders are well known for when it comes to their local government, there is a provision both in our charter as well as in the culture of this city of community engagement and community service. And so where in other cities, it's just a self-loathing piece, in Portland, it's a self-loathing combined with direct community engagement of some of the truly most knowledgeable and experienced people in our city. And this is one more example where a truly phenomenal leader, Kimberly Moreland, is stepping up to provide her time, her talent, her energy, and allow all the rest of us to benefit from her experience. And to me, this is really one of the coolest things about Portland government, is this direct opportunity for people to engage and bring their experience and expertise to the table. You are a perfect candidate for this. I know you're a hard worker. You come highly recommended. We're all supportive of you. I'm very happy to vote aye. The report is approved. The appointment is approved. Thank you. And we look forward to hearing a lot more from you in the future. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Next item, 178, please.
Amend Portland Utility Board Code with housekeeping changes for clarity and to increase equity and inclusion.
Colleagues, the Portland Utility Board, also known as the PUB, provides oversight to the Bureau of Environmental Services and the Portland Water Bureau. The City Budget Office was tasked with staffing the PUB as a more neutral third party outside of the utility bureaus. This ordinance seeks to provide some housekeeping changes to modernize the code language, brings it in line with current board practices, and allows for the PUB to provide stipends to their members in accordance with city policy and or guidance from the commissioner in charge. Director Kennard from the City Budget Office will speak more on that subject. But before I pass it along to Director Kennard, Commissioner Mapps, would you like to add anything?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just would like to thank the PUB for their service to our city. I appreciate their hard work in helping BES and the Water Bureau spend the public's dollars effectively. I largely support the code language changes that the PUB membership has requested. However, I am concerned about endorsing one of the advisory committee's recommendations. And that's the suggestion that we provide stipends to members of the PUB. In general, I am very much open to stipends for volunteers who serve on our city committees. At the same time, I know the Office of Civic Life is developing a formal policy on this. One of my concerns or hopes is that we could align these two processes so that if we do provide the PUB with a stipend, we do it in concert with the policies being developed at a Civic Life. I'd also like to ask the city attorney to identify other ways to provide incentives for volunteers to serve on committees. These might be anything from bus passes to internet access and other potential non-monetary forms of compensation. But with that caveat, I am delighted to endorse the PUB's recommendations.
Thank you, Commissioner Mapps. And with that, we'll turn it over to, Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess I could wait till after Director Kennard spoke, but I wanted to support Commissioner Mapps. I think we have a very disjointed system of providing stipends. Some people get them, some don't. And you may remember we did bring a policy to City Council last year that was really cost prohibited if we were going to provide stipends for all the community oversight boards that we were going to, that we have at the City of Portland. And so I am not sure that any additional work has been done to move that proposal forward or to develop some criteria. I am also concerned about the ad hoc way we do this. So it would be my hope that collectively as a council, we will decide how we will prioritize who gets stipends and who doesn't, because what we're doing now is very inequitable. And it leads to some people having a benefit and many other people not. So thank you, Commissioner Mapps, for just acknowledging that. And I also share that concern and would rather do it in a much more holistic fashion.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. With that, we'll turn it over to Director Kennard.
Thank you, Mayor, and good morning to you and to the council, and thank you to Commissioners Mapps and Hardesty for those comments. For the record, my name is Jessica Kennard, and I'm the city's budget director. The City Budget Office is charged with providing independent and impartial city support for the Portland Utility Board, which is a community oversight body for the Water and Environmental Services Bureaus. The ordinance in front of you today is primarily geared at small technical changes, which includes changing the word citizen to people, changing the reference to board chair to allow for co-chairs, and eliminating current language that prohibits board members from receiving compensation unless they are receiving compensation from their employers during time served. While these changes are all technical in nature and do not compel immediate action on the part of the board, that last change is a critical prerequisite to being able to offer stipends to new and current board members. While technical in nature, it's worth noting that this change seeks to dismantle an inequity that is enshrined in code, as the current language actively allows for a disparity amongst board members based upon each member's individual employment status and type. Additionally, as the Office of Community and Civic Life is working on a citywide stipend policy as directed by the council, taking this action to change this language now will ensure that the board will be able to move forward in alignment with the new citywide policy once it is ready. I wholeheartedly support this change and I appreciate the pub's work in bringing it forward. While this ordinance lifts a prohibition on stipends, it does not require that stipends be offered. However, I should mention that the pub has indicated its desire to offer stipends as part of the next recruitment cycle. And so I am working with the board and other stakeholders, including Civic Life, and I will follow up with your office, Commissioner Mapps, as well as other stakeholders to seek timely agreement on the appropriate path forward. I absolutely acknowledge the challenges and the issues that you all raised. And of course, as the budget director, I am also concerned about citywide financial implications and equity implications citywide. So I intend to follow up with all the stakeholders and see if we can find a path forward that works for everyone.
How about loud?
All right. So I know how critical, I lost track of my spot. Again, the changes presented to you today are purely technical in nature, and they do not compel any immediate pub changes, but I did want to provide some additional context for the transparency's sake, knowing that this is an important citywide issue related to stipends, and I'm available to answer any questions.
Very good. Colleagues, any questions? Let me just say I agree with my colleagues that, you know, Director Kennard, you're right. This lifts a prohibition, but I also agree with my colleagues. We really need a system-wide approach to this. And so, I believe this is coming back to CAB, to leadership, council office leadership. And I know we've been discussing this for the longest time. I think we've been discussing this since I joined the council over 4 years ago. And really we need to make a decision. And so that's not your job and it's not the pub's job. That's really the city council's job and our leadership team's job to figure this out once and for all. But I just want to mirror what my two colleagues said on the subject. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. And thank you, Director Kennard. It is kind of funny to have a budget director actually presenting something that actually has a budgetary impact. So I'm kind of chuckling about that. I will commit today to follow up with the Office of Civic Life and just kind of refamiliarize myself with where we left that process. But I do recall that there was a huge financial impact. And so let me go back and redo what I have, and I will share that with my colleagues. And Mayor, maybe as we move, I can actually send out a memo and just kind of tell you this is where we left it, because I think it's been long enough that most of us don't remember the details of why we tabled it.
I don't, so that'd be helpful.
Okay, I will make a commitment to do that. And Jessica, I will also meet with you after I've actually done that analysis. Thank you.
Great. And Director Kennard, I know this is slightly off topic, but since we're not voting on this today, I'll go slightly off topic. There may be other ways that we can help. I mean, stipends are sort of one way. I hear from a lot of folks, childcare is sort of the deal breaker. Mm-hmm. For young parents. I hear others say it's transportation impediments. They don't own a car, so we can get bus passes. I mean, there may be other ways to do this where it's not a budget buster, but it still really peels away the barriers that are preventing some people from being able to participate. And I'd encourage us to take a good hard look. And it's not just on Commissioner Hardesty. I mean, she's got the Office of Community and Civic Life, but she's right. We sort of tabled this at some point because we got sideswiped by COVID and other issues.
Yeah, and to be clear, I agree with you, and I am following up. I have talked with the folks working on this at the Office of Community and Civic Life, and all of the strategies that you are proposing are things that they are thinking about and that they're considering, and we will be in conversation with them. The item in front of you today, again, is making technical changes. Of course, it is up to you whether or not you want to move them forward. If it is your direction that you are not, you want to be sure that the Portland Utility Board does not offer stipends until, you know, further discussion, then I am happy to give that direction to the board and take it upon myself to follow up each individually with you, as well as, you know, with the CAB and others before we allow for stipends to go forward for this body. I do want to say that this item does allow for the board to move forward once we are ready, right? And so we would need to come back to the council for this technical change at a later time, or we could move it forward now, and you could direct me to come back to you all or individually to your policy advisors to before moving forward with stipends for the group.
Okay. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. I would just say, Director Kennard, I would be concerned about passing a policy that says you can when we don't have a citywide policy that says you can. And so my recommendation would be to take it back to the pub and let them know that over the next couple of months, the City Council will make a decision about where we stand on stipends, because if this is being pushed forward as an equity issue, then we cannot create inequity and passing a policy.
I have a question, Director Kennard. I would assume that is the pub paid for out of general fund or is it paid for out of utility rates? You may have said and I just didn't hear.
So the support for the pub is paid for by the Water Bureau and the Bureau of Environmental Services. The estimated financial impact of this were the board to move forward with stipends, it would be in alignment with task force recommendations from Civic Life from last year, which would have a cap of $500.
So am I getting stupid or am I, think I'm just getting stupid with age. I
didn't a year, the estimated impact would be about split between those two bureaus.
Say again?
The financial impact would be $5,500 split between those two bureaus.
So is that general fund or is that utility rate payer funds?
It is utility.
Ah, okay. Did you say that? I just didn't understand that.
No, I think I've turned my camera off. I'm sorry.
Okay, good. All right, good. I'm glad we got that. So that is utility. And I would assume that you have already, that this has been thoroughly vetted with legal counsel, that that is an allowable expenditure of utility ratepayer funds.
I believe so. I know we have been working with our attorney, Robert Taylor, on this item. I'm going to confirm with Amy Archer Masters, who is one of our support staff working on this, that she has confirmed with the attorney's office that this is allowable.
If Robert's working on it, I have great confidence that he's already dotted those I's and crossed those T's, but couldn't hurt just for your own edification to check on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm happy Lorenzo calling me.
Yeah. So I'm happy to come back to you all. It sounds like we need to do a little more work on this end, and I'm happy to do that and come back to you at a later time.
Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And I take that back about John. He's a nice guy. I don't care if he calls me. I just don't want him to sue me. I don't want him to serve me papers. Good. Anything else on this item? Is there public testimony, Keelan?
Yes, we have one person signed up.
All right, bring him or her on.
Caitlin Nissen.
Welcome, Caitlin.
Hello, can you guys all hear me today?
Yep, loud and clear, you sound great.
Perfect. Okay, so I do apologize, but this does not have anything to do with the current agenda item. I am speaking on behalf of item 165, just because you guys did close down communications for that. And I apologize.
I'm sorry, that's not appropriate, Caitlin.
I am a constituent of yours. Are you not going to hear me?
You know what? Just because I'm in a good mood and I'm a nice guy, I will violate the clearly stated rules of the city council. You have 2 minutes.
Perfect. Thank you so much. So I just want to start with the 180 days with the outdoor camps. I completely support everything else. I love Hazelnut Grove. I like the tiny house ideas. I'm in full support of that, but I do just want to point out that the as the Portland City Council so eloquently puts it, renaming homeless camps as outdoor shelters. I am just kind of trying to advise against that. I think we really should focus more on the tiny home situation. When I listened to all of the hours from the previous day, I did testify when there was 108 people. A lot of people were concerned about the 180 days. And I just think it's important to affiliate that with the crisis at the border, because the House of Representatives passed an immigration bill creating a pathway to citizenship for Dreamers. So legislation would create a process to earn temporary status as a certified agricultural worker for people who have worked at least 180 days in agriculture over the past 2 years. Spouses and children could also apply for temporary status under the act. Now I understand, now Caitlin, it says people who've worked in agriculture for the last 2 years, but there is a catch. The legislation would create a pathway for workers to get a green card by paying a $1,000 fine and engaging in additional agricultural work, depending on how long they have worked in agriculture in the US. So basically pay $1,000, you can be an indentured servant, work in agriculture, you can become a US citizen. I just worry that the crisis at the border will find its way through the one state between us and the crisis at the border into Oregon. And it's just funny that the 180 day outdoor shelter term for any nonprofit to make a shelter, and then the 180 days to work in agriculture. We know there's a lot of agriculture in Oregon. I would like to move on to all the talk of race and talking about Asian hate. I just want to point out that the Portland City Council contributed to Asian hate back when there was a power grab for police commissioner between Ted Wheeler and Joanne Hardesty. There was an officer, Mr. Lee. There was groups that were outraged that an Asian person was going to be appointed into a police assistant commissioner role. And there were groups that were outraged that there was no input from the community, and saying that the police deputies are going to be whitewashed. So I'm just saying, if you guys are trying to figure out where Asian hate is coming from, I also spoke on this issue at a Portland City Council meeting. When I brought this to the attention of the Portland City Council that you guys are being racist against Asian people,
all right,
I was given a head nod, and I appreciate your time.
Two and a half minutes. Thank you very much. No good deed goes unpunished. All right, so next item, 179, please. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't move the 178. Was there any further discussion on that before I move it to second reading? This is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. 179.
Mayor?
Yeah, Commissioner Hardesty.
Did we agree that that was going to go back to Director Kennard for additional work?
Oh, I think we did. That's your understanding, right? That was my understanding.
Any yes.
Commissioner in charge, any objections? That's you, Mr.
Nope, Matt. We're good. Yeah, okay, nope, we're awesome. Good.
Good. All right, thank you. Director Kennard, do you understand that?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you all.
Thank you. Thanks for the presentation. 179, please. I don't hear anything. 179, Keelan, you there?
Oh, sorry. I'm here.
All right.
Authorize contract with Dell Marketing LP to purchase Microsoft Office 365 licenses and Microsoft Software as a Service for amount not to exceed $6,500,000 for a 3-year period.
Colleagues, this ordinance would extend to the city's current contract with Dell Corporation for Microsoft products to continue the City of Portland subscription to the Office 365 suite of products, which have been critical during the past year of substantial remote working. We're going to hear a brief presentation from the Bureau of Technology Services discussing the value of this contract from their perspective, which provides essential collaboration tools for the City of Portland employees. There you have it. Welcome.
Great. Well, good morning, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. My name is Brian Perello. I am the Support Center Division Manager in the Bureau of Technology Services. I do have responsibility for the city's contract for purchasing products from the Microsoft Corporation. Sherry Graber is also here. She is the supervisor of the technology procurement team in BTS. So today we're here seeking authorization to implement a new enterprise agreement with the Microsoft Corporation as our current 3-year contract ends on May 1st, 2021. We have been using Office 365 at the City of Portland since 2012. Through this new 3-year contract, Microsoft will continue to provide the Office 365 solution to most City of Portland employees, excluding the Police Bureau. We are requesting $6.5 million for licenses over the next 3 years. While Microsoft is the original provider of the solution, they don't allow for direct purchase and they require a value-added reseller or VAR to be used to make these purchases. The City of Portland uses Dell as our VAR. Software and services under this agreement are used to support the city's collaboration and productivity with tools like Outlook, Word, PowerPoint, Teams, and a few others. Without these reliable and adequate collaboration and productivity tools, our city services would likely come to a halt. Our implementation of Microsoft's Office 365 solution has resulted in a high availability of these collaboration and productivity tools, even during this huge uptick in adoption and usage during COVID remote work. For instance, between January and May of 2020, the use of Microsoft Teams by city employees increased by approximately 400%. Funding will be provided by bureaus for the staff currently using Microsoft Office 365 licenses. And we are here and happy to answer any questions you have about this.
Commissioner Hardesty has a question for you.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Brian, for that presentation. I am curious if we've ever thought about another venue that is significantly less expensive other than continuing to renew these kind of licenses that are, should I say, extremely expensive and really in the new tech age that we're in. I think that there are many other options out there. So I was shocked to find that we were still connected to Dell when I came to the City of Portland, because that's like really, really, really old technology. And so what's the plan for us to actually evaluate whether or not this still works on behalf of the City of Portland?
Thank you. Thank you for the question. I would like to propose that there aren't a lot of other good options for enterprise collaboration solution for the City of Portland. This is due to the broad adoption of Microsoft products worldwide, really. And it benefits the city of Portland to maintain the same worldwide standard in order to collaborate with most of our partners outside of the city. Also, a move off of the Office 365 solution after the last 9 years of use would be a multi-year, very expensive effort for BTS and its stakeholders.
The county seems to be able to run their system very effectively utilizing Google. And so I'm just curious as to why we are still just, you know, because we've done it for 9 years, we're still doing it the same way.
Yeah, thank you. We do work closely with the county and are familiar with some of their Google implementation. Our information says that really they're paying very similar prices to us, that there's not a reduction in cost because they're using Google. In fact, what we know about their implementation is they're using Google and Microsoft because of the previous discussion that I just had there, because most of the world uses Microsoft solution. They still have to use, for instance, Word to create a document to collaborate with their peers. They have some trouble using the Google solution to do so. So they're really in a situation where they're using two solutions, and that's a path that we'd like to avoid.
Thank you, appreciate that.
Commissioner Mapps.
Thanks for the presentation. Two quick questions, and I'll share both of them and you can figure out how you want to take them. Why does this contract explicitly exclude the police department? What software do they use for this problem? And my second question is, in my time on council, I've heard Commissioner Hardesty raise concerns about the lack of email addresses for members of the fire department. I'm wondering if this contract creates a lane for addressing that issue.
Yeah, thank you for both questions. I'll start with the question regarding the police bureau. So historically, there have been these federal criminal justice information rules, we call them CJIS rules, that have prohibited the police bureau from using Office 365 because of where the data lives. It's not on site. Microsoft owns the data. That's actually changed lately. Those rules and the state of Oregon have made some shifts in the way they're handling that situation. And BTS is actively working right now with the police bureau to determine if they would like to join the Office 365 subscription model in the future. If they choose to do so, it would be as an amendment to this agreement. Regarding your second question about why some folks in PBOT and fire specifically haven't had these licenses in the past. We've actually got some really good news that even in the last 2 weeks, BTS and PBOT have worked together to license more than 200 of their field staff that hadn't been licensed in the past. And that's just happened in the last couple weeks. When other bureaus are ready to do the same as PBOT, this contract has room to allow onboarding of any of those staff members in the fire bureau or otherwise.
Will that cost extra?
It wouldn't require another trip to city council to extend the agreement. There's room in the contract, but yes, those bureaus would have to pay for the monthly subscriptions.
All right, great. Thank you very much.
Very good. Colleagues, any further questions on this item? Does that complete your presentation, Brian?
Yeah, sure does. Thank you
Very
for your
good.
Time.
Helen, is there a public testimony?
No one signed up, Mayor.
Call the roll.
Rubio?
Thanks for the presentation. And I too would just like to go on record that, you know, once it's time again, the time is right, I would like more information about exploring the Google option. I have heard that at the county, there is a lot of more user-friendly attributes, I will say, connected to that interface. So I would just like more information when at a timely place next time. I vote aye.
Ryan.
Yes, thank you for that presentation. I'm in agreement with my colleagues about digging in further. I do think that I want to also acknowledge you and your team for allowing us all to work virtually during this time. I realize that you've been through a lot, so I wanted to take this moment to acknowledge that. And I also hope that this vendor, big one that it is providing us the best security possible during this time as well. And so I did want to hear more about that. The city business must go on. I realize it's time sensitive. I vote aye.
Thank you.
Hardesty.
I also want to appreciate, I know how hard you work to be able to have public testimony as part of the city council meeting during this pandemic. And so I do want to acknowledge that a lot of work has happened to allow us to be able to do city council meetings from home, to have public testimony, and a lot of us had to learn how to use all this new fancy equipment virtually. And your team has been absolutely patient and very helpful through that transition. But I think there are always new opportunities to look for new partnerships that will serve us better. And just because they're big and they've been around forever doesn't mean they're our best option today. So I also look forward to when it's time for, long before it's time for the renewal, us having a conversation about what other options are out there and how we start exploring those. So I'm happy to vote aye today.
Maps.
I want to thank Brian for his presentation today. I really appreciate the answers to the questions I had. And I vote aye.
Wheeler.
I want to thank Commissioner Ryan for acknowledging the work that BTS has been doing for the last year plus, trying to move everything offsite and trying to make my laptop work, trying to make my cell phone work despite my efforts to make it hard. BTS has really done an exemplary job, and I want to thank you, Brian, and all of your colleagues. So please pass that on behalf of the City Council. And Dan, thank you for mentioning that. I'm happy to vote aye on this. Aye. The ordinance is adopted. Next item is 180.
Authorize price agreements for wastewater treatment and structural engineering services in support of the Bureau of Environmental Services Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant in amount not to exceed $17,125,000.
Colleagues, this ordinance would authorize price agreements to support ongoing needs for wastewater treatment engineering services at the Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant, as well as the Tryon Creek Wastewater Treatment Plant and structural engineering services for the city's 98 pump stations. Scott Schneider from Procurement Services and Mike Pomomo from the Bureau of Environmental Services are here to present the ordinance and answer any questions anybody may have about this project. Welcome.
Good morning, Mayor. Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Scott Schneider from Procurement Services. Also with me this morning is Mike Pomomo from the Bureau of Environmental Services. We're here to recommend the Council authorize the Chief Procurement Officer to enter into 5 price agreements for wastewater treatment engineering services and 3 price agreements for structural engineering services in support of the Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant. On May 28th, 2020, the city issued a request for proposals number 1468 for on-call wastewater treatment engineering and structural engineering services, and on July 22nd received 15 proposals. An evaluation committee scored the proposals in accordance with Chapter 5.68 of City Code and deemed Brown and Caldwell Inc., HDR Engineering Inc., Kennedy Jenks Consultants Inc., Parametrics Inc., and Tetra Tech Inc. as the most responsive and qualified proposers in the wastewater treatment engineering category, and ABHT LLC, Cooper Zietz Engineers Inc., and PBS Engineering Environmental Inc. as the most responsive and qualified proposers in the structural engineering category. The city's aspirational 20% subcontracting equity goal applies to these services, and the proposer is committed to subcontracting 20% to consultants certified by the state's Certification Office for Business Inclusion and Diversity. All of the awardees are in full compliance with city contracting requirements, and I recommend that you authorize these contracts. If you have any questions about the procurement process, I can answer those. Also, if you have any questions about this program, I'll turn it over to Mike.
Where's my mute? Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you for the presentation. I guess my first question is really around, this is a significant size contract. Why are we doing a $17 million contract as compared to other size contracts?
Thank you, Commissioner. So I'll let Mike talk about the program and the size of their demand. But one thing I'll note is that these are on-call contracts for as-needed services. And so the value of the contracts would be based upon the historic demand for these periodic needs.
Thank you, Commissioner. Again, for the record, my name is Mike Pomomo with the Bureau of Environmental Services. So yes, I think Scott pretty much answered in terms of the question of the size of the contract. Most of the work has not specifically been identified. These contracts are a large capacity, and as individual needs are identified, specific scopes and tasks will be assigned periodically over the next 5 years to address needs, again, over this five-year period that we anticipate these contracts being in play.
And is there a reason why we would authorize giving you $17 million and then you kind of figuring it out along the way? I mean, is this a normal process for us?
Thank you for that question. Essentially, this is based on historic spend. And again, there's a need that's out there that we've been tracking. And the amounts that we have anticipated are already built into the Bureau's CIP budget to address these needs for the assets. And so when you spread it out over the course of the 5 years that's in the CIP, the $17 million is a very small portion of the need that's out there.
Thank you. I appreciate that explanation. I think as the council continues to talk about whether or not who's benefiting from public contracts, when $17 million is set aside for a very small group of companies to be on call, does that not create barriers for other companies who are emerging that could possibly do some of the work? I don't know the answer to that. I'm just putting that question out there because I do think we miss opportunities for innovation when we lock in a contract over 5 years at that dollar amount. And for me, I'm concerned about who actually benefits from it, right? Though we have aspirational goals all across the board, at $17 million, there should be significant benefit for a whole host of community members. And so I just want to say I'm just concerned that we're locking in $17 million over 5 years without clearly understanding who will benefit and who won't, other than the companies that you've mentioned that actually responded to the RFP. So thank you.
I might add very quickly that we do have aspirational goals of 20%, and I believe all of the winning proposers have committed 30% or more in terms of the DMW ESB participation for these contracts. So it wouldn't be going exclusively to those companies in question. It would be split out between, again, DMW ESB and also SDV firms as well.
And do you have a monitoring system in place to ensure that as you call them for work, that you are monitoring that they, in fact, have the 30% MWESB and that it is a mix rather than just the normal suspects?
Yes, ma'am. I think, Scott, you can probably speak a little bit more eloquently to what the specific tracking and the requirements are on that, but we do have a system of tracking that.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. So in these on-call contracts, because the scopes of work aren't known at the outset, the subcontracting plans are developed when the task orders are executed. So along the way, when the scopes of work are known, then the outreach takes place and the task order documents the subcontracting commitment for that particular scope.
All right, great. Colleagues, any further questions on this item? See, this is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. Thanks, appreciate it.
Mayor, this is Keelan. I'm sorry, just want to put on record
that no one public testimony. I apologize.
Yep, no one signed up. Thank you.
Nobody signed up. All right, good. Then I didn't screw up. All right, first reading of the non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. Thank you. 181, please.
Assess benefited properties for street, sidewalk, stormwater, and mast arm traffic signal improvements at the Northwest 23rd Avenue, Vaughn Street, and US 30 intersection in the Northwest 20th Avenue Local Improvement District.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. My apologies for not being ready for you at the moment. I will be turning this over to PBOT, but let me just say that this item is a key success of the project. Was providing rare new street connections in Northwest Portland, the most densely populated neighborhood between San Francisco and Seattle. The value of properties in the original LID was $98 million at the LID formation and has increased to $263 million and is already at the halfway point of achieving $0.5 billion in development that was predicted at the LID formation, with more development to follow. Redeveloping surface parking lots has not only enabled transit-oriented development, but has also removed a key obstacle to extending the Portland streetcar to Montgomery Park in the future. Building the new Northwest 20th Avenue reconnected neighborhoods on either side of US 30, there was bifurcated when the Fremont Bridge opened in 1973. Say that three times fast. Building the new Northwest Thurman Street connection and eliminating a previous dead end east of Northwest 21st Avenue was a catalyst for TriMet to extend bus line number 24 from its previous termination at Emmanuel Hospital to Northwest Portland, providing a new transit connection over the Fremont Bridge. Northwest 20th Avenue was also built with a new protected bike lane design that was first of its kind in the city and has been recognized for its innovation by Bike Portland. I also want to take the opportunity to thank some key stakeholders in this effort, Craig Boritz of Conway Inc. and Jill Long of Glassman Coaching and Consulting for their excellent work working with the city and the Northwest DA Neighborhood Association in planning. Phil Sessinger and Gene Harrison of the Northwest District Association for their close collaboration with PBOT. And at this time, I will turn it over to Andrew for his presentation. Andrew, take it away.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty.
Andrew, you're muted.
Is that better?
Yeah, thank you.
Keelan, next slide, please. So this is a picture on the left of what Northwest 20th and Upshur looked like in 1930. And used to be a very vibrant neighborhood before it was bifurcated by the US 30 ramp when the Fremont Bridge was opened. You can see that picture on the right. where we reconnected those streets 47 years later. Next picture, please. So this is one of my favorite slides on the left. This diagram on the left really shows how pedestrians were an afterthought when the Fremont Bridge was designed. You can see those little purple arrows on the left. That is how a pedestrian used to have to cross the intersection if they wanted to get from the southeast corner to the northeast corner. And we reopened that closed crosswalk after 47 years to make it easier for pedestrians to cross there, in addition to the new pedestrian connection we built three blocks east at Northwest 20th Avenue. You can see that picture in the top right. We sped things up for transit. And while this isn't the Rose Lane project, a key objective was speeding up running times on all the bus line traveling through the intersection. And one of the things that we did to reduce delays at this intersection is it used to be going northbound on Northwest 23rd Avenue, there was a no right turn on red. We put in a dedicated traffic signal to flush out the northbound traffic to let it get onto US 30 eastbound. Next slide, please. So this is the recap that TriMet sent us about 6 years ago. And this intersection was the 19th worst intersection in the city of Portland for transit delays. So that's why we spent the extra money to do this intersection right, to significantly reduce those delays. Next slide, please. So you can see that picture on the left from 10 years ago. You can see all that traffic backing up on northbound Northwest 23rd Avenue approaching the freeway. You can see that picture I took on the right last weekend. You can see that traffic has been fleshed out with the new traffic signal. So I really want to emphasize, this isn't an exercise in necessarily building wider streets. It's about building streets to operate more efficiently with smarter traffic signals. Next slide, please. And then as Commissioner Hardesty noted, the new Thurman Street connection that we built allowed TriMet for the very first time in its history to operate a bus line over the Fremont Bridge. Next slide, please. And then this is just a picture of the new separated bike facilities on Northwest 20th Avenue. Next slide, please. This is the final slide, and I just wanted to tie this in to the recent improvements that we did on Northwest NATO Parkway and Northwest Front Avenue. Sorry that I froze up on my Zoom session 3 weeks ago, but what I just wanted to share with council is that as of 16 years ago, we didn't have a single bike lane or a single bike facility on Southwest or Northwest NATO Parkway. And the pavement there was in really bad shape as well. So we have really come a long way in the last 16 years. Project by project, we have introduced not only bike lanes on Northwest and Southwest NATO Parkway, but we've just now started construction on the Better NATO project. We have rehabilitated the pavement on a key connection to Northwest Portland. And you can see from the circle there in the lower left corner, that's where the 23rd and Vaughan intersection is that we improved. You can also see just slightly to the northeast of that is the new connection underneath US 30 that we built as well. So if you just simply look at the geography of this area, Front Avenue is the most direct route to many portions of Northwest Portland. So the combination of improving that connection and building this LID, we hope will significantly improve the bike modal split in Northwest Portland, which at the time that we formed the LID was only 4.9% versus the citywide average of 6.2%. So that concludes my presentation today. We have invited testimony from Warren Rosenfeld, and I'm happy to answer any questions that council might have.
Thank you, Andrew. Before we get to Warren, does anybody have any questions? Welcome, Mr. Rosenfeld. Good to see you.
Mayor, council members, good morning. I'm Warren Rosenfeld, 2495 Northwest Nicolai, which is the headquarters of my family's non-ferrous recycling business, Calbag Metals. We've been in business over 100 years. My tenure has been for the last 43 years. And I would say that I've traveled through the intersection of Vaughan and 23rd no less than 10,000 times during that period, and have actually run that intersection no less than 1,000 times. More recently, we became part of the ownership group that bought the ESCO properties. One of the purchase conditions was the assumption of ESCO's contribution to the Vaughan Street LID. That took us all of about 30 seconds to agree to. The new signal control and lane improvements have made traffic move. Many thanks to Andrew and to the city. The LID has reminded us the path to success is understanding the challenge, getting everyone together to develop the solution, gather up the broadest range of resources, and get it done. It's amazing. And I can only say thanks from one of the old guys in the neighborhood.
Warren, thanks for being here today. And thanks for sharing your experiences. And you've put us all to shame with the 10,000 crossings and the 1,000 run across. That's impressive, very impressive work. Andrew, does that complete?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
No, you're doing great. Keep at it. Andrew, does that complete your presentation and invited testimony?
It does, Mayor. Thank you very much. I really appreciate the public-private partnership with Warren and others in the LID. Thank you.
Warren is a good man, and he's a exemplary citizen of this city. And I mean that personally. I really appreciate everything he does. Is there any question at this point before I call for public testimony? And Commissioner Hardesty is on, by the way. She got disconnected, but she's here on the phone. So she is still with us. Is there any public testimony, Keelan, on this item?
No one signed up.
All right, very good. This is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. The next item is item number 182, which is a second reading.
Amend contract. Sorry.
What happened?
Mr. Mayor, yes. Do we have, is there a four-fifths item, 181.2?
Yeah, we'll do that at the end.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna get through 182, then we're gonna go back to 174 that got pulled off the consent agenda, then we'll do the four-fifths item.
Great, thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, 182, amend contract with HDR Engineering, Inc. for additional support services for the Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant Renewable Natural Gas Facility, project number E10033, for $283,039.
Very good. This is a second reading. We have already heard testimony from staff, as well as the opportunity for public testimony from the public. Is there any further business on this item before I call the roll? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. We'll go back to item 174 that was pulled off of the consent agenda.
Authorize a contract with Oregon Department of Transportation for the purpose of cost-sharing power and maintenance responsibilities for traffic signals, rectangular rapid flash beacons, and other traffic control devices along state facilities within Portland city limits.
Was this pulled by a commissioner or a member of the public?
A member of the public, Edith Gillis, pulled this, but I don't believe she is on the call any longer.
All right. Well, let me call for her once. Edith, are you on the line? She is not on the line. 174 is an emergency ordinance. Please call the roll.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. We'll now go to the 4/5 item, and could legal counsel confirm we do not have to vote to bring that to the agenda? That's already been done through the proper notification. Mark, you there?
Yeah, sorry about that. I was just unmuting. Yes.
Thank you.
That is appropriate.
So we do not have to vote to put it on the agenda. It's already formally on the agenda. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay, good. Keelan, could you please read the 4/5 item?
182-1, authorize a letter of agreement between the city and the Portland Police Association representing emergency communications dispatchers to amend the language in Article 23 of the collective bargaining agreement to allow for the city to provide one deferred holiday to each PPA BOEC member on Juneteenth, June 19th, each calendar year.
Commissioner Mapps.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Colleagues, I am delighted to bring this ordinance before council. Let me put this into some historical context for you. Back on June 17th, 2020, council approved Juneteenth as an official city holiday. Of course, Juneteenth celebrates the emancipation of those who were enslaved in the United States. This new holiday uniquely reflects the city's core values of anti-racism, equity, transparency, communication, collaboration, and fiscal responsibility, which were also adopted that very same day. Now, the ordinance before us this afternoon is to amend the contract with our Bowick emergency communication dispatchers and call takers so that the city recognizes the official city holiday for these critical employees. For more details on this ordinance, I'm delighted to hand it over to BHR Labor Relations Coordinator Jamal Anthony. Jamal, can you please take it over from here?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that introduction, Commissioner Matt.
Of course.
Hello to everybody else in attendance today. So for this particular ordinance here, as you stated, on June 17th, council approved the Juneteenth official holiday. But the BOEC, that bureau, those employees receive their leave banks a little bit different than the rest of our employees. So all of their hours tend to just sit in one collective bank. So we needed to figure out how to allocate those hours appropriately. So in the interest of equitably offering the Juneteenth holiday to all city employees, the city will provide one deferred holiday in the amount of 9.5 hours to each PPA BOEC represented employee on June 19th, each calendar year. The deferred holidays will be placed into a separate leave bank for the employees' use. Employees will not receive any sort of holiday premium pay for working this holiday. The deferred holiday will be provided whether the employee is on their regular day off or a scheduled work day. And these deferred holidays will be prorated for all part-time employees based on their number of hours that they are regularly scheduled to work in a pay period. As far as for the budgetary impact, we view this as a limited to no budgetary impact for the Bureau, adding this holiday to dispatchers and call takers because callers and dispatchers and call takers have to take their time off by requesting it in advance. And overtime to cover planned staffing absences is present in the Bureau's budget and does not need to be adjusted. This agreement, if passed, will be retroactive to June 19, 2020, and will remain in effect through the duration of the current CBA, which expires June 30th, 2023, at which point we will look to integrate this into the successor negotiations as we move forward.
Very good. Thank you, colleagues. Any questions on this item? Keelan, any public testimony on this item?
No. We had closed testimony before this was made available, so we weren't able to receive any requests for testimony.
Very good. Call the roll. I'm sorry. Ryan has his hand up.
Can yeah.
I apologize. No,
thank you. Yeah, absolutely. It's all right. Thank you, Jamal Anthony, for that presentation. You did say something, though, that makes me want to ask a basic question, and I pardon my ignorance, but maybe someone's listening would have the same question. You said 9.5 hours as opposed correct. To 8 hours. And I just want my little brain wants to know why it's not 8 hours.
That's a wonderful question. We just decided to be generous. No, I tease Commissioner Ryan. The employees out in Bowick, their traditional shift is a 10-hour shift. That's the normal shift that those employees work, is a 10-hour shift. So in order to recognize that, we did the 9.5 aligned for the 30-minute lunch period as well.
Of course, now I'm wondering why it's not 10. But anyway, thank you for the explaining that. I
not a problem.
No, I do. Thank you, Jamal.
Very good. Any further questions or discussion on this item? Keelan, please call the roll.
Rubio.
Thank you, Commissioner Mapps, as well as the staff for bringing this item to council. Very happy to support and long overdue. I vote aye.
Ryan.
Yes, I enthusiastically vote aye. Thank you.
Hardesty.
She voted aye.
I have no mute now.
No. You heard that, right, Keelan?
I didn't. Did she vote aye?
She's voting aye, correct.
Okay.
She's on with me.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry about that. Mapps?
I want to thank all the staff who worked real hard to get this issue before council today. I want to thank Jamal for his presentation. And I want to thank our staff over at BOIC for the life-saving work that they do every minute of every day. I'm delighted to vote aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. And Keelan, that completes our business for this morning, correct?
It does, Mayor.
Very good. Colleagues, we're adjourned till 2 p.m.
Thanks, Mayor. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Commissioner. See you soon.